I want to say is they really don't care about us. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and you are at the right place at the right time. Today, well, we have a very, very, very special program in store for you. That's right, a very special program set up just for you. As you know, we are in the midst of our Black History programming. And so with that, we have guests that are going to specifically address some of the African-American issues. Now, for those of you who are our regular listeners, you know, we don't limit ourselves to, well, we don't limit ourselves to African-American history only on Black History Month. But for our purposes today, we are absolutely going to stay with the Black History theme. Yes, we have a couple of guests that I believe are truly going to be worth you tuning into. By the way, did I mention my name is Daryl Clark, and this is the one and only Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out we bring you news and information brought to you from around the world. News you can use. News intended to inspire you and enlighten you, of course, to empower you, and hopefully to encourage you and instill you to get involved, to make a difference. You know, one of the topics that we're going to talk about today is going to be what is happening in the Black community that is degrading. But today we're going to have a little bit of a different perspective. Today we're actually going to talk about how is it that African Americans are contributing to this degradation, if you will. So we're going to start out with our first guest, who's been a guest of ours before, and he's going to. He's going to talk about just that. How is it that we African Americans, living here for the time we've been here, 100 years, and still haven't found our way generally, I have to say generally, because there are a few who have been able to filter through and get to what they call what the American dream. But the question is, how is it How is it that after all this time, so many, too many, have not been able to make their way into the American dream? And how much of that is due to us? Us being African Americans. Explore that. And we're really going to take some depth in exploring that, in fact. Our first guest, Dr. Eddie Taylor, has done much research in this area. For those of you who are regular listeners, well, you've been privy to some of that. You know that Dr. Taylor truly walks the talk. He's a psychologist. He's truly a humanitarian. He's an author. He's an educator. And he's going to get into, as I said, some depth about the research that he has actually put into this topic. Following Dr. Taylor, we're going to have a very special guest, and that very special guest is going to be Dr. Lynn Lewis. And Dr. Lewis is going to pick up, so to speak, where Dr. Taylor leaves off, in that she, as a sociologist, will continue that same dialogue in to a significant degree, in some vein, with regard to this subject matter. So, without further ado, we did have a little bit of difficulty reaching Dr. Taylor, but he's in studio right now. Now, keep in mind, as I bridge in Dr. Taylor, what he has to share with us in no way, no how, can be covered in the limited time that we have Dr. Taylor with us. He is very limited in his time frame. We may have 15 or 20 minutes with Dr. Taylor. However, as you regular listeners know how we do things here on Progressive News, we will pick this up at his earliest availability in the weeks ahead. And I've already assured him that I will make space for him to continue this very, very important dialogue, whether it be next week or the week after or the week after, depending on his very, very busy schedule. And I'll tell you in a moment why his schedule is so exceptionally busy right now. However, without further ado, I want to introduce, for our regular listeners, again, Dr. Eddie Taylor. Dr. Taylor, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Darryl Clark. I really appreciate it. Appreciate being here.
Dr. Taylor, since you first told me the research that you've been doing, I've just been excited. I know you have limited time today, and you've been a friend of Progressive News, and, well, I consider you, we've talked over the years many times, a friend as well, but okay. I am going to put you on the spot as I have in the past. Will you continue? You know what I'm going to say. Will you continue this? Because we're in no way going to get beyond the tip of this dialogue, and this is so important. I mean, I literally am very excited about the research that you've recently done, because it's near and dear to me.
Right.
And I opened up with Michael's, and there's only one real Michael for me in terms of music, and that's Michael Jackson. I opened up with his "They Really Don't Care About Us," and the "they" is the piece that I think segues into our conversation here. Is it just the white man? Is it the government? Is it our neighbor? Who is they? I would say, to some extent, probably all of the above. But what we want to talk about today is, do we sometimes, as African Americans, get in our own way? And I know you've done some research on that, Dr. Taylor. So tell us, first of all, congratulations on the new book, and I'm looking forward to getting into it in depth. So by the next time you come, I will have read a whole lot more. But the new book, which I love, "The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America." Listeners, that's right. "The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America." First of all, what does the title imply? Is it as the title states? Give us a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing with the book, what I aim to do with the book. "The Day the Crabs Got Out" is based upon that proverbial idea of the crabs in the barrel. How that, what happens, that what keeps the crabs in the barrel are the crabs that are in the barrel. And so I look at that and look at how the crabs got into the barrel. I look at it from a psychological point of view, but what I've done in this book, different from the other, is that I do not use a lot of psychological terms and psychological theories and philosophies. I basically use everyday language and imagery to understand what's going on and what has happened to keep the crabs in the barrel. And the book is, I've written the book so that it can be something that an individual can pick up, read, and then understand what needs to happen, what needs to take place.
So the last book, which I absolutely love, "Restoring the Minds of Black America," you're absolutely on point, of course. It's your book. More psychoanalytical, dealing more with the psychological aspect of, you know, how we got here, you know, talking about some of the impacts that some of the heroes of our past have had on us now. This book, I haven't gotten into it in depth. I have to be very frank about it, but it appears as though this is more bringing it down base. Anybody could get this, because frankly, I think that this could apply to individuals, not just, you know, what is it that we as a society of blacks aren't doing for each other.
Right.
I know I've been discriminated in the workplace by so-called brother or sisters talking about another African-American in my career as much or maybe more than I have against or by non-African-Americans. I won't say white because I've been discriminated against all of them, but Caucasian and Asian and the whole bit, non-African-American. So I say that this book, and I can't wait to really get into the depth of it, may go broad-based to the point where it can touch virtually everyone in the African American community.
Yeah.
So tell us about this. Let's get into a little bit of depth about this. The crabs in a barrel. Right now, we've had Ferguson, New York, my hometown, Cleveland. Which you know, I'm due to the French. My children who are listening pissed off about. you know, but there's a reality there that there are more, you know, of course, naturally, the statistics bear it out, murders at the hands of African Americans. Of course, we don't want to have any one of our children murdered by some, you know, racist, bigoted, non-African American. That just seems to pour salt in the wound. But the reality is we still need to address what we may not be or are not, from your research, doing that we could do to help ourselves. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and that's the bulk of the book, you know, what we need to do to help ourselves. And, you know, if you look at the crabs getting out of the barrel, it's the work of the crabs that are in the barrel. And then also the work of the crabs that have already made it outside of the barrel. As W.B. Du Bois talked about, that 10%, how there's an elite group, there's that 10% who are successful. So what happens with this is that we talk about the 10% going back to help the 90%. That's how it's going to work. It's an unfortunate thing that in order for the crabs to stay in the barrel, they must take on some type of mentality for those who are out of the barrel to think that they're better than the crabs in the barrel, they're not like the crabs in the barrel, so then they disconnect. But in order for this to happen, those who have made it out must go back to get in. And so that's the subtitle of the book is The Revival of Black America. So not only the day the crabs get out, but it's the revival of Black America. It's going back to those days in which we were united, days in which we were wanting to help each other and be supportive of each other. And even today, you can even see that today in separate or unique situations. Perhaps you're driving down the highway at night. You may be on Highway 10 or Highway 20, driving in Mississippi at night. You need to get some gas. Now, it's good when you see the Confederate flag flying, you need to get some gas, and then you see a black face. When you see that black face is, some believe it or not, that's some type of security because you see another black person in an uncomfortable place. And
right.
So that same feeling that you get when you see a black person in a hostile, racist environment is the same feeling that we need to have in order to get out of this barrel.
Wow. Wow. That's a beautiful thing. Let's get into some specifics. I know that you talk about roles that we can play that were played, if I can use that term loosely, in the 60s when we were in the height of a civil rights movement, such as organizations, institutions. I could mention churches. I can mention civic and community organizations. SNCC and, of course, NAACP, and I can go on, ACLU. Talk a little bit about the roles that are not being played that you see as perhaps playing a pivotal role for the revival, as you call it.
Okay, so I'll share that. Now, the book, I'll say that the book is, I make the book short so that individuals will not get bogged down in reading it, you know, several days. And so an individual would be able to read the book within maybe 2 or 3 hours. Because there's so much happening in our community that I did not want to make a book that would consume all the time and energy reading the book rather than applying the practical aspects of the things that I mentioned in the book. So everything that you've mentioned, when I look at the book and I look at the organizations that were involved, and so I talk about the organizations that were involved during the 60s, organizations that were involved pre-Emancipation Proclamation and post-slavery. And so I look at like the antebellum and then the post-slavery period. I look at the organizations that were actively involved then and then those organizations that are today. So I do not, you know, we have the Black Panther Party, but then there's a new Black Panther Party. So, you know, that can be complicated if you don't really understand the Black Pantherism. So I didn't include the Black Panther Party in the book, but I included organizations that were actively involved in liberating us from the conditions that we were in during those days. One of the challenges that I've seen, which is a huge issue, is that, and I talk about this in the book, and I mention it, I talk about the history of these organizations, and it's important for organizations to understand their history. If they don't understand their history, they will not function as they were meant to function, which may some may consider it to be dysfunctional, but they are not functioning. So I look at the organization, an outstanding organization within Black America, is NAACP. The power, the strength, the structure, the foundation of the organization is what has helped Black America through the civil rights movement. You know, we have the leaders, we have the organizations, but then we had the NAACP, which took on a dominant role. They took a lot of heat, took a lot of flack, had a lot of issues, but they were the ones that were actively involved in dealing with a lot of issues, dealing with a lot of legal issues that we have to deal with, but they were very much involved. And so within the book, I briefly talk about the history. And so once the NAACP and those who are still supporters, they will understand how the organization began rather than what's going on in some place today. And then those who are, you know, willing to support the NAACP will understand exactly what they are supporting. The issue is that C within the NAACP has somehow taken on a different meaning. And so the C, during that time in which the NAACP began, the C represented or meant, it was a nomenclature for the descendants of African slaves. And that's what it was for. It wasn't for non-whites. It wasn't for people who had pigmentation in their skin. It was for individuals who were the descendants of African slaves, Black folk, Negroes, color folk, us. And so some of the issues that have gone on is that the energy, the support, the strength, the direction, the focus has been on us, but it also has been on everyone else. And so rather than giving us 100% of their energy, they began to spread on their energy and support to others as well.
Wow, that's profound. That's all I can tell you. Keeping it real, Dr. Taylor, as you always have, and I suspect always will. So, in other words, we need to be keeping those organizations, and I'm not going to try to just focus on NAACP. That was an excellent example, but I'm sure not the only scenario of how we can evolve. Or actually, a better word, I think, is to revive, as you say in the title of your book, Revival uh-huh. of Black America, some of the historic institutional functionality. The institutions uh-huh. may be there, but the functionality may have waned a bit for various
right.
reasons, which we can get into down the road, because I know I only have about another minute with you. But is that somewhat of what you're speaking of when you say the revival?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And
wow.
then, you know, and then the issue there, it isn't for anyone to say the NAACP, they aren't doing their job. The NAACP, they need to pick up their slack. The NAACP, no, the issue there is for those who support the NAACP to once again renew their support. It's for those who are considering joining and participating in NAACP to understand what the organization is about. It's for those who were at one point active members to come back and to help those who are trying to take up and pick up the baton and move on. And so it's that revival. And so it's not for anyone else to point a finger and say the NAACP are not doing what they need to do. It's for the NAACP and those who want to support it to say, that's what we need to do. Just go back to
okay,
our foundation.
Okay, now as we segue off, because
mm-hmm.
I know that you said that you had a time constraint,
yes.
I didn't finish putting you on the spot, asking you if you would be willing to come back at your, I know you probably don't have the calendar sitting right there in front of you, but if we can talk afterwards, either this evening or tomorrow or sometime in the next few days, if you can check your calendar, would you be willing to come back and continue this dialogue? You know how we do, Dr. Taylor. We finish the subject matter until we complete the information dissemination. So would you be willing to do that?
Yes, absolutely. And my book, currently it is it will be back online February the 25th, and it's actually on my website, www.eddietaylorphd.com. So the book will be back online on February the 25th. It's temporarily unavailable, but it will be available on February 25th. And then there is a link on my website for the book, which includes Restoring the Mind of Black America and also The Day the Crabs Got Out. On the website.
I'd like for you to give your website one more time, if you would, please.
It's www.eddietaylorphd.com.
Folks, it's www.eddietaylorphd.com. If you didn't get it, of course, you can always send me an email at progressivenews@msn.com or simply send it to me direct at Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore CLA18@msn.com, and I'll be sure to get you the information so that you can get an early start on the book, because I can see that one just flying out. I know that I'm riveted because it's such a needed topic, Dr. Taylor. So I just want to thank you. And for those of you who joined us late, we've been talking with the one and only Dr. Eddie Taylor, a clinical psychologist. Dr. Taylor holds two masters. He's an author, an educator, humanitarian. And we've been talking about his new book, but not so much the new book. Dr. Taylor puts the work behind his books. And this is really about how we as African Americans need to begin to make the difference. We can't rely on anyone else. As the bumper tune from Michael Jackson said, they don't really care about us, but who are the they? Is it some other race? Is it some religion other than the one you practice? Is it your neighbor? Is it the organization that perhaps you've always come to rely on that unintentionally or otherwise is not serving the purpose that they're able to serve? We're going to delve into this a lot deeper, and I'm looking so forward to it. Dr. Taylor, thank you again for joining us on Progressive News Weekly, and certainly I can't wait to reach out to you to see when you're going to be joining us again to continue this. And you know, in the past we've done, what, two or three programs in a row to complete the subject matter. So however long it takes, we're going to delve into this. Listeners, I suggest you get the book, read the book, then we can have some constructive dialogue because it is live. We just don't have time to take calls. There's some folks that want to talk with you, Doctor. I know you got to go. I don't suspect you can take one, but you'll be back, right?
Yes, I'll be back.
Okay, so for that listener, we have a couple that want. I know one was on at the top of the program. It's just been, I want to have a question. I apologize. We will have Dr. Taylor back. I can guarantee you that. Stay tuned to Progressive News Weekly announcements. And I can assure you, we have your number. You'll be the first to be able to comment and correspond with Dr. Taylor because he does have an engagement that he's already 4 minutes late for. Thank you, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Well, I promised you it would be a carrot, and to hold on to your seats, he's going to be back, I'm hoping, within the next couple of weeks. As you can imagine, he's much sought after because of this latest book, right on the heels of his book prior to that, Restoring the Minds of Black America, which is another go-getter. Hopefully he'll be able to join us in the next 2 weeks. Now, without further ado, you thought that one had you going. This next segment, promised, is featuring another energy that you'll want to participate in. Dr. Lynn Lewis is an author, she's a therapist, a sociologist, she's a humanitarian, she's a former professor of sociology, therefore she's a sociologist. She has done work with numerous Fortune 500 companies, serving as a team building facilitator, working on cultural diversity, conflict resolution. She's a consultant, a motivational speaker. She's been on Fox, CNN, BET. I just want to welcome to our airwaves for the first time, Dr. Lynn Lewis. And so we will open the lines for Dr. Lewis, but we're going to get to know her a little bit. Welcome, Dr. Lewis.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you, Daryl.
Dr. Lewis, you know, the last few days or week or so that we've talked and corresponded, it's been so enlightening. What a special energy you bring. I'm honored, and I mean that, to have you on with all the work that you've done to make a difference. And what I love specifically is that although you are impacting in a broad brush, you do a lot of individual work, and that's a wonderful thing.
Yes, you know, sometimes we have to take one person at a time, and then other times we speak to a general audience, and we cannot afford to limit ourselves with either or. Some individuals need individual attention, and some can get it in a group setting. So we have to be flexible. And I'm just glad I'm blessed with that flexibility and understanding of the needs of people, at least some of them.
You know, I know for our purposes today, we're not going to spend a lot of time with your new book. I just want to put it out there, if you don't mind.
Right.
Don't
no
hate
problem.
Player,
yes.
Learn the game, how to spot ineligible bachelors. I'm just going to put that out there as a carrot for our listeners, because I already put you on the spot, and you promised me you'd come back next month, which is just a week away.
No question about it. I would love to. Yes.
I can't wait to get into that one.
Same
that
here.
Is going to really be exciting. But, you know, speaking of that, that gets into relationships, and I know that Black history is something near and dear to you. In fact, you're a Black
yes.
history buff, and we
yes.
had some good dialogue on that. Again, in fact, you've done a significant amount of research in that area and even do a reenactment of Fannie Lou Hamer.
Yes.
Of,
yes, one
her
of the
historic,
greatest. Exactly.
1964 National Democratic Speech. Now, I'm just curious if we can just get to know Dr. Lynn Lewis just a little bit. Were you always driven to be this people person, this gregarious humanitarian that just wanted to make a difference, or was there some salient situation that happened in your life to this?
Well, let me say this, Daryl. A female who has known me, as she would like to say, before I was born, and she recently died at the ripe age of 101 years old.
Wow.
She told me that I would be in the basement of the church and I would tell her, I'm going to be somebody. I don't remember it, but she said it was just so profound to her that a child would say that it stuck with her all those years. And the last time I saw her, she was 100 years old, and she reminded me of that. And I cannot really, in all honesty, take credit for that, because I am a product of a loving family and a loving mother and a loving father and a loving community and people in the school who embraced me and loved me. So whatever it is that I'm doing right and just and honorable with integrity and dignity is traceable back to those individuals who cared enough to aid in the cultivation of my mind and my spirit. And I owe it all to them. So when I said I'm going to be somebody, it was only because people had told me that I could be somebody, and I believed them.
Wow. You know, that ties into, you know, our topic of our Black heritage and
yes.
where we are today as it relates to that, and where that disjointedness, you know, where that happened, because I think it was more commonplace 20, 30 years ago. You know, you knew something about your history, and we've always had broken homes, you know, for the last 50 years, but not to the level that we have today. And even when we did 30 years ago, there was a sense of culture and heritage that was just implied in being a parent that you brought to your children. I don't know if that's happening as much today as it did. What's your thought on that?
It is not, and there are reasons for that. Number one, when I grew up in Monroe, Louisiana, Black people did not have a class issue, and by that I mean Black people of all different walks of life lived together in the same community. So you could be a laborer and you could live next door to a dentist, or you could be a skilled tradesman or a maid, and you could live next door to a teacher. So within the Black community over 50 years ago, people of all different walks of life, all different economic statuses were in the same community. Today, the communities have separated themselves based on class. So now we not only have a separation based on race, we have a separation based on class. That class separation then filters in to the school system. Once upon a time, offspring of Black parents of all different walks of life went to school together. Today, for the most part, African Americans of lower economic statuses go to school with other African-Americans of lower economic statuses, those are middle class, go to school with other middle class. So here we have this class separation, and it has hurt the Black community. The other thing is, even when schools were segregated, long after 1954 Brown versus Board of Education, particularly in the South, you had Black people teaching Black people who cared about those students. And so what you have now is, in some schools, you have people of all different other races and ethnic backgrounds other than African Americans, or a small percentage of African Americans teaching Black children who are not their neighbors, who don't go to church with them, who don't go to community activities with them. So other than outside of that school and outside of that classroom, the very persons they teach are strangers. So these are problems.
Whoa, that was you hit a lot with that one. You just shot
yeah.
that out of the barrel. That's like a shotgun. Because, I mean, as you were talking, a lot of that resonated for me. Little Black kid born in east side of Cleveland, Ohio, and right in our neighborhood, you're right, we had some doctors, and you know, it wasn't so much a class thing. You know,
right.
I went to school with some children whose parents were doing, you know, fairly well, relatively speaking.
Right.
You hit all of, and all everything you said was not just going on in Monroe. I believe
right.
what you just said was happening in New York. It was
right.
happening in St. Louis. It was
yeah.
happening in Mississippi, where my
mm-hmm.
family is from. It was
okay.
happening in California. It was happening in all the large and small nooks and crannies and metropolitan black communities in America.
Right.
I really do believe that. And now what we're seeing is the fruit of that class and caste system
right.
is coming here in America as almost as though we see in some, I want to say third world, but, you know, India is not a third world, but they certainly have a class and caste system.
Right, exactly.
You
exactly.
see a lot of what is happening in Asia and some of the, what we used to look at in disdain happening
mm-hmm.
when 20, 30 years ago, happening right here in America.
No question about it. No question. We used to just focus on the color caste system, but we've got to include far more than that. Now we have to include a class caste system coupled with a color caste system. Then those systems are segregated geographically and residentially. So it actually is more profound, and it's more of a negative impact on the lives of the most vulnerable and the economically poorest.
You know, one thing I don't like is that saying, rising tide floats all boats. I don't like that. I've had guests that have who have made that statement, because it ain't going to float a boat that's got a hole in it.
That's
you
right.
You know,
exactly.
It's just not, it doesn't work. And it bothers me, and it ties back to, I don't know if you heard some of Dr. Taylor's segment speaking on, that crab in a barrel kind of mindset. But it's different now. Those who have made it, I don't see looking back like, you know, the Lena Horns and the even Sammy. People don't realize. They thought, oh, he was with the Rat Pack. He was, oh, you know, white lover. But Sammy was very well-rooted
right.
to some degree. But I'm just saying, James, say it loud and black and proud. You know, now it's this whole thugism thing. And initially, I remember when rap first came out and, you know, you had NWA and some of the groups that were trying to talk about, so I'm not going to take it, but in the what it ended up being was thugism, disrespecting, you know, the black woman. It just evolved in something that's very ugly, and it seems like that's all that, or the majority of what's being promoted now.
It's very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. I remember a time when you couldn't pay a black man to denigrate a black woman publicly. I remember a time where black men would hold black women in the highest esteem and view it as their duty to help her. I remember the little club that was in our community. At that time, black folk owned what was in black communities as businesses. So the little club that the neighborhood people went to on the weekend, I remember everyone knew this one black woman who would get drunk. But the men made sure she got home safely. That doesn't happen today. So there was honor even amongst the persons who were drinking and the drunks. But we've lost that. There's this denigration of women. There's this negative whole portrayal of women. And once men began to denigrate the women who birthed them, that group of people is in a world of trouble.
And you're right. And you know what I think is begin to also happen? I believe the women have begun to demonstrate a certain amount of lack of self-respect.
I totally agree with you. Totally.
They don't. It's almost a lack of hope. It's a survival technique almost, because there's no one to turn to. That's just a theory.
Yeah, I think what happens, and it's interesting you should say that because I just spoke on that yesterday. One of the things I notice is when I go to different community service station or stores that are mainly owned by Middle Easterners, they are Arabs or Chaldeans or Armenians or Iraqis or Iranians, and I will see the men behind the counter say to the black women, "Hey, baby, thank you, honey," and I was telling this group of women, those words are supposed to be used for someone who knows you intimately. And for me, I take it as a sign of disrespect. And in the event they don't know that culturally, I explain to the gentleman, "Sir, please don't call me baby. I am old enough to be your mother. And I don't think you may have meant any harm. However, let me just give you a quick lesson on culture 101. Culturally, that is not respectful to me." And he apologized. But by the same Daryl, no sooner than I was leaving out of the store, some woman came in, and there she was embracing the baby and honey. So we have to be real careful. And I'm sure that that kind of language is not used to women of other different ethnic and racial backgrounds. So I take issue with that. And it's a two-way street. We as African-American women must carry ourselves in a respectful way and demand respect, and we must not tolerate any hints of disrespect from any group, including black men.
What is your thought on the influence of the media, of entertainers, of athletes, all of which now, unlike again 30 years ago, I mean they were affluent, but now it's really off the chart. It's created in a sense, I believe. As an economics background, a lot of that class and caste, that division of those who are doing very well and those who are not.
Right.
But that's another topic. But what's your take on how they've influenced all of this, generally speaking?
Okay. First of all, let me say the spectrum runs from alpha to omega. You have some very honorable athletes and entertainers who have a very solid humanitarian and philanthropic platform, and they mm-hmm. have demonstrated their commitment to the community. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have people who operate strictly out of an I, me, and mine, and they don't care who gets hurt by what they are promoting that is negative. And that's very unfortunate, because for the youngsters especially, social media and media in general play a major role in shaping and molding their system of thinking and their attitudes and how they see themselves. So when you have women and men who see others as denigrating, not only women, denigrating men as well, that is very unfortunate, because that then filters down into all types of relationships. The children begin to disrespect their parents. The boyfriends disrespect the girlfriends. The girlfriends disrespect the boyfriends. The husbands disrespect the wives, and the wives disrespect the husband. So now we have a serious problem on all different levels of disrespect.
You know, I think about, you know, it, back in, what was it, 70s, 80s, that whole integration thing. I wonder if how good that really was, because it seems like we've taken on a lot of the immorals. Because, you know, some of the things you're talking about, I think, is not limited to the African-American community. But as you said
not
earlier, and I believe even Dr. Taylor mentioned it in one form or another, you know, when America has a cold, we get pneumonia.
We get
because
pneumonia.
Right. Of our vulnerability. So if those that be, that have a heavy influence on the morals of society have decided, you know, we're just going to lower everything, well, with that being the case, it would affect non-African Americans, and I'm not just talking white, we're talking Asian.
Everybody.
And the like. I mean,
right.
You know, you can see some where Asians are traditionally, speaking of our Japanese, Chinese brothers and sisters, typically used to be very conservative. You can see some walking around like Lady Gaga, you know, but
right.
That's farther and fewer in between than you'll see our African-American brothers and sisters. You see it in a much greater proportion. So, again, if societal norm has been lowered, it seems like we feel the greatest brunt of that. And by the way, I understand totally what you're saying about, in answer to my question, how there are athletes and entertainers who, you know, do have the self-respect and upstand.
Exactly.
Image.
Yeah, and they, you know, they do a lot to help the community. They'll go back to their communities and help the children, and I applaud them for it. But by the same token, we know what has recently happened in the NFL. I'm very concerned about the whole abuse issue, and the part of the abuse issue that grew out of the NFL situation focused on domestic violence with emphasis on men abusing women. And I don't get me wrong, I do not want to reduce the importance of that. But what I would have loved for media to have done is place the same level of importance on the abuse of children by parents and others. For an example, when we get to talking about whipping, from my theoretical perspective, in the black community grew out of slavery. I have in therapy, I have had people come to me for therapy who have given me horror stories of how they were whipped and how they were beaten, electric cords and switches and put on their knees and made to get naked, and some of them were put in the shower so water would be on them before they were whipped with thick belts and ropes and everything. So I'm trying to get African Americans to realize, I've asked some students, what was the purpose of slaves whipping, of slave owners whipping slaves? And they would run this litany of reasons. Well, they wanted to make them submissive. They wanted to control them. They wanted to use them as examples. All were correct. They wanted to strip them of their self-esteem and their self-worth, make them internalize feelings of hopelessness and helplessness and uselessness. Fine. I said, now, if those were the reasons they whipped the slaves, why are you whipping your children? If you know that the end results will manifest in destroying that child's self-esteem and self-worth and self-confidence and possibly internalizing feelings of hopelessness and uselessness and powerlessness, why are you whipping them? And so my now challenge to the black community is no more whipping.
Wow. Wow. Listen, I have we have just a matter of moments, and and well, you'll be back in a couple of weeks, but still and yet, can you take a comment from, well, look, our own engineer, Cecil, has a comment. Can you take a comment? I'm going
to
bring him in.
I would love to.
Cecil, are you there?
Yes.